against ARC Community Services. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Kelly. I represent Selena Venturelli in this appeal from a summary judgment entered in her discrimination case pursuant to the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. We believe that Ms. Venturelli presented compelling evidence that she was the victim of pregnancy discrimination. We believe she did that by presenting both a direct case showing both direct and circumstantial evidence that would allow a jury to conclude that she wasn't hired for a position at ARC Community Services because of her pregnancy. And we believe that we did that by presenting an indirect case, the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting methodology, by showing that Ms. Venturelli was qualified for the job, that she had applied for the job, that it was both held open for a period of time and then filled.
Mr. Kelly, what is Ms. Venturelli's injury here?
Her injury is that she should have been hired if pregnancy had been ignored sometime in the area of February 14th at the very latest, and that's only if you believe that the 520-hour requirement played a role here, or if you don't believe that played a role, and there's compelling evidence that it didn't, she should have been hired sometime before that, perhaps as early as January.
What is the injury?
The injury is that because she wasn't hired during that time frame, she lost wages that she would have earned during that time frame, and in fact never was hired by ARC Community Services. So she was basically denied employment, and the very fact of being denied employment is an injury.
That seems rather excessive, since you say that your client voluntarily decided not to go back. And one of the things that's troubling here is this appears to be, one might express it as vindication of the concerns expressed by or attributed to ARC, that Venturelli wouldn't come back after maternity, and in fact, she didn't.
She didn't because she wasn't ever offered a job.
Well,
if she had been offered a job that
before she left or ever?
Before she left, she would have accepted the job. Afterwards, she actually never was offered a job.
I take it, however, that it is undisputed in this record that she would have been offered a job had she called back.
No, I don't think it's undisputed. I don't think it's...
How could it not be undisputed? Their affidavit saying that that's what would have happened.
Their affidavit is saying that at some point in March, I think, Karen Kinsey claims to have called Selena Venturelli and left a message for her. Selena Venturelli disputes that that ever happened, and I think Judge Randa's decision notes that that is a fact in dispute.
Did Ms. Venturelli ever call back? Did she ever indicate some... hope to come back to work there or anything after she left for her pregnancy leave?
Not after she left, no. And basically at that point, she was so shocked and offended by the fact that an employer would take her pregnancy into account that I think her motivating factor for not calling back is that she didn't want to work for an employer that would discriminate against her on the basis of pregnancy.
No, she was shocked and offended at what point?
At February
14th? Was that the day she left?
The day she left was the 24th, I think.
Okay.
But she was shocked.
What was the indication? When did she indicate to the company that she wanted to take pregnancy leave?
Well, she was never an employee of the company, so she didn't ever say, I want to take pregnancy leave.
Oh, she only told that to her employer?
No, she had scheduled an ending date for her temporary employment of February
24th. When do you want to call? She must have told somebody an ending date, didn't she?
Right. She told everybody that her ending date was going to be February 24th, including the temp agency that had
assigned
her.
And that's the day they had the shower,
baby
shower. And when was she offended?
When Mr. Collins came to her in January and again in February and basically grilled her about her pregnancy and started telling her that we know how pregnant women are. Once you get this baby in your hands, you're not going to want to come back to work.
Why do you say he's grilling her about about it. He was just talking about it. I don't see that there's anything.
I don't know that that's bad about that.
And plus, didn't they hire a woman who was pregnant to do this job?
No, they didn't hire a woman who was pregnant. They had a temp in the position who was pregnant. When they hired her, she was no longer pregnant. She was a woman outside of the protected class when they hired her. This is a consistent pattern between these two individuals. When they are pregnant temps, ARC won't hire them. After they've had their babies and they're no longer pregnant, ARC wants to hire them. That's a violation of the Pregnancy Discrimination Act because that conditions employment on the woman no longer being a part of the protected class.
Do you think it violates the Anti-Pregnancy Discrimination Act for an employer to ask what your plans are after the birth of the child?
No.
No. So what did they do here that was so awful beyond...
Beyond not hiring her because she was pregnant?
Hmm?
Beyond not hiring her because she was pregnant?
No. Beyond asking the questions about it. I know we've got these hours and all this sort of stuff.
Right. What they did that was so awful was to not hire her because she was pregnant, and that's a violation of the law. And I think our direct evidence shows that.
What if she had been asked, what are your plans after the baby is born? And
mm-hmm.
she said, right now I think I'm not going to work.
I don't think they'd have to hire her.
So...
But they didn't do that.
So you admit that it's okay to ask these kind of questions, whether it's grilling her or not, that's another story.
It's okay to ask an employee questions about their willingness to work and whether they're going to come back from work. But to then follow that up with, we know how you women are. Once you get that baby in your hands, you say you're going to take 6 weeks, but then it's going to turn into 8, and then it's going to turn into 12, and then you're going to decide not to come back to work, which is basically what Mike Collins was telling her. Then it goes beyond gathering information about the future employability and becomes judging a woman based on stereotypes about what pregnant women are likely to do, as opposed to asking Selena, will you come back from work? When will you come back to work if we hire you now? How long will you be off before you come back to work? And then exercising business judgment about whether that's a situation that fits within the business or not. They didn't do any of that. They just assumed that because she was pregnant, she would not come back to work after she delivered her baby.
But didn't they hold the job open sort of on the assumption that she's coming back? Didn't they stop advertising for something? And it seems that whatever the undisputed evidence is, that the people at ARC did want her for this position.
Sure, they wanted her for the position. She was well qualified for it.
Well, why is it... I can't make the connection that when she was working for the temp,
mm-hmm.
and there is a dispute, or not a dispute, but there is an issue that you have to pay the temp if you hire him before a certain time, and that's sort of hanging there in some as an issue. But they seem to be pretty well convinced that this is the person they want to hire. Obviously, she has to come back to work. Your dispute seems to be that they didn't hire her at the latest February 14th when they know she's going to leave 24th and then be gone for whatever the length of the duration of the pregnancy. And then she, I guess, without saying so, she would have come back to work as opposed to coming to work.
Well, I guess the flip side of that, Your Honor, is that it has to violate the Pregnancy Discrimination Act for an employer to say to a job applicant, yeah, you're perfectly qualified, we want you, the job is available, you could start today, but you're pregnant, so why don't you come back after you're not pregnant, and then we'll hire you. Well, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act says you're supposed to ignore the fact of pregnancy. And if you say to a woman, we'll hire you when you're not pregnant...
What the Act says is you're supposed to treat pregnant women identically to persons not pregnant. So that leaves the question whether ARC has hired other people who were expecting an extended break in service. If you look at the category of people ARC has hired, do any of them fit in the set of job offer made, say, expected 8-week break in service, and then return?
I'm sure there aren't, Your Honor, but that's not the only way to prove one of these cases. You don't need comparative evidence to prove a Pregnancy Discrimination Act case.
That's what the statute says. The statute says you have to treat a pregnant woman identically to a person not pregnant, but otherwise similarly situated. So that leads to the question whether the employer is willing to make offers of employment for somebody who has a large expected break in service. Because if the answer is no, then there's been no differential treatment.
Your Honor, I don't think that that is an issue in this case, because ARC never defended this case on the theory that it was denying her employment because there was going to be a break in the terms of service. ARC never said it would have been a problem for them to let her take their ordinary maternity leave and come back. We proved the case in a different way, because I think it's probably impossible to prove a Pregnancy Discrimination Act case if you have to look for that kind of narrowly comparative evidence. We proved it by using direct evidence of the fact of pregnancy being a motivating factor. And what the Harris decision tells us is that employers are required to ignore pregnancy. If using the court theory, I would think that it would be impossible to win a Pregnancy Discrimination Act case, because every employer who says, sorry honey, come back when you're not pregnant, is going to be able to raise as a defense, well, there would have been an expected break in service, and you can't find anybody else we didn't hire when there was going to be an expected break in service for some reason other than pregnancy, and so we win, even though we acknowledge we did not hire this woman because she was pregnant. That cannot be the congressional intent underlying the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, and it just isn't.
Well, what if you take this situation, that she is clearly working for this temp agency? She's not an employee of CRC. They conclude that they would like to hire her at the point when she is, we'll call it, hireable, without a penalty. Let's just leave that hypothetical. She's already given notice to whoever would listen that she's not going to be there after February 24th because she's going to have a baby. Is it really wrong to say, given all of these situations, you're working for this temporary agency, but at the and you're going to be leaving to have a baby, but at the end of that time you will have had the baby and you will no longer be working for the temp agency, we would like to hire you then? You think that's just wrong to do that?
It's wrong when you base the decision not to hire merely upon the fact of the pregnancy.
Well,
not
merely. She's not working for them now. And
right.
And there's unequivocally, she's going to be leaving.
Sure.
And she will have, after she left it, whatever the date is, depending on the hours she works, she will have exceeded the 520 hours. So they can hire her without being penalized by the temp agency. Why would it be wrong to say, we'll hire you then? We'd like to have you come to work for us then. You think because they took the obvious into consideration that she's going to be leaving to have the baby, that you can't make that a starting date?
ARC didn't say we're not hiring you because you're leaving to have a baby and it would be disruptive to our business to hire you into a position and then have you leave right away. That has never been ARC's defense. In fact, ARC
would that be a defense?
If they could show under Maldonado that they had a strong good faith basis for believing that it would be disruptive to their business, it may well be. But that has never been a defense that ARC asserted in this case. ARC's position, according to Karen Kinsey, the executive director, is that they wanted Selena in that position as soon as possible, maybe as early as January. So this just isn't the case to present that fact situation. The only facts presented in this case are that ARC wanted Selena Venturelli, that the only reason ARC didn't hire Selena Venturelli is that it had a stereotypical belief that a pregnant woman isn't going to come back to work after she has her baby. Without asking Selena, will you come back to work, and without having any good faith basis for thinking she wouldn't come back to work.
Detriment to that, if they had hired her before she left, let's say 2 weeks before she left, that they would then have to pay her for all the time she was gone, or is there some economic detriment to hiring someone 2 weeks before they leave and then having them gone for, let's say, 8 weeks?
I don't think there's any evidence in the record of any economic detriment
whatsoever.
Okay,
so she could have taken an unpaid leave of absence, let's say. So Okay.
I guess without cutting into my rebuttal time, I'll end at this point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Ms. Brooks.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Amy Brooks, and I represent ARC Community Services. I understand the interchangeable use of ARC and ARCC, but I'm going to use the term ARC. I would first like to address one of the early questions that Judge Easterbrook posed to Mr. Kelly, because I think it's very important. It's actually undisputed in the record in Ms. Venturelli's deposition at pages 71 and 84 that prior to her leave, she was planning on taking at least a two-week personal leave of absence. And afterwards, she had told ADECO, the temporary agency, that she was going to take an indefinite leave of absence. She did not specify how long she would be out. And I think that plays into some important considerations. The critical analysis in this case is that what reasonable inferences may be drawn by the disputed comments that were made by the decision makers of ARC. And the plaintiff summarizes all that evidence in his initial brief, or in Mr. Kelly's initial brief. And, I mean, that can be summarized as follows, that Karen Kinsey, the executive director, supposedly or allegedly told Collins that he could only offer a job that would be good when she came back, that Baldwin, the assistant director, told Ms. Venturelli that she would have a job to come back to, but that she could take her time, and that Collins, the controller, made two comments or similar comments that had the same effect. One was that women may not return after having their baby to the employer, and that number two, when they go out on leave, that they may decide that they need more leave time. And what the district court appropriately found is that the reasonable inferences that can be drawn from these comments is that either ARC feared that she would not return after her leave, or ARC feared that her leave, because it was indefinite at this point, may go on for an extended period of time. And that under Maldonado and Troop, neither of these considerations are improper.
Now, would that fear, as you put it, be a reason not to hire her for that very short period of time before she left because they didn't know whether she was coming back? Is that what we're looking at?
I believe so, very clearly under Maldonado. The reason is because, granted, ARC's position was that it offered her a job and that it didn't start her in the job before she left simply because she didn't say that she wanted to start. The judge found those facts in dispute and said, look, the best inference that can be drawn is that ARC decided that it wouldn't hire her just these few days before her leave started and it would wait until after. And so ARC was not really in the position of presenting evidence of economic detriment as to why it would be a detriment to it to hold that job or to place her in that job for a few days and then to hold the job open for an indefinite amount of time. But one could certainly envision detriment. I mean, there would be administrative tasks with hiring a new employee, enrolling in the insurance, and the like. But at the end of the day, I think that Maldonado, especially...
You said something about the insurance. Wasn't she told that there'd be no insurance coverage for a pre-existing condition?
That was not true. But in looking at the facts, the district court found that Ms. Baldwin was the one who communicated that misinformation, and while Venturelli was sitting in her office, she called the insurance agency, and Baldwin claimed she got misinformation and relayed that to Venturelli. And Venturelli did not present any evidence to dispute that.
So it's not, when you say it was not correct, you mean it was correct that she'd made the call and got that information, but the information turned out not to be correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, returning to my point about Maldonado, especially in footnote number 7, Maldonado indicates that employers can take into consideration not the fact of pregnancy, but the fact that the employee may not be available for work in the future, so long as the employer has evidence to rely on that the employee is indeed not going to be available. And it says that if an employee wants a leave, it equates in footnote 7 that that would be a special treatment that the employee is asking for. And really, if the court buys the plaintiff's or the appellant's the appellee's interpretation of Maldonado and the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, it converts the PDA into an accommodation statute, which is clearly not. What she wanted was a special accommodation. She wanted to be placed in a job for a few short days, and then she wanted the job to be held open indefinitely, when there's simply no evidence that ARC would have offered that same sort of preferential treatment or accommodation to another employee. Maldonado does not stand for the proposition that ARC was under an obligation to present evidence of an undue burden or the like.
Because it seems that the record doesn't, at least what the briefs were indicating, is that they didn't actually fill that job, sort of in anticipation of her coming back, and then they didn't get a hold of her, so they hired somebody else.
For several months, it held the job.
Well, which is kind of a long time. I don't know how much in demand this job was, but it seemed not to be filled for quite a while.
That's correct.
So this fear of her not coming back wasn't all that big a deal, was it?
This is interesting procedurally, because ARC's position, and the judge decided that it was in dispute. ARC said, look, we're offering her job, and we are willing to hold it open. The judge said, well, that's not really how I take the comments to mean. The comments from Collins and Baldwin mean to me, in a very reasonable interpretation, that you are afraid to actually move her into a permanent type of position until you're sure she's back here for good. And with that, ARC would be able to prove an economic detriment, but I would assert that it didn't have to because of how this issue came up in the district court, and also that Maldonado indicates that, per se, a pregnant employee asking for an extended leave of absence is the type of special treatment that Maldonado indicates that a...
No, that's the question, isn't it? Whether this would be special treatment or ordinary treatment? What does the record show about what ARC has done with respect to other employees or would-be employees who would have extended leaves or extended absences?
The record is silent as to that point, because just like the plaintiff in Troop, the plaintiff in this case did not look for that evidence.
Well, then I suppose we need to know who has the burden of persuasion on that topic.
The plaintiff does under Troop, which talks about combining a direct evidence and still having this comparative evidence in place. That's a burden that's placed on the plaintiff. And if you're using the indirect burden shifting method, then that's also the plaintiff's burden. And that was one of the downfalls of the plaintiff in Troop. I would like to address Troop briefly, because it's the most analogous, if not directly on point, case in this matter. I mean, Troop, the court in Troop decided that one of the inferences that would
Troop
be...
Troop wasn't really about inferences. I mean, you had the fact of a lot of absenteeism there. This case is looking into the future. What's going to happen to her if she gets a job?
But
it's a lot harder case.
I would respectfully assert that Troop's discussion on the issue of the employer's fear that the employee would not return to work in the future is considered it as a separate inference from the absences in the past, because the plaintiff wanted the court to consider that inference, and the court said, here's a separate inference. But even under this inference, which is that the employer really terminated the plaintiff there because it expected that she wouldn't return back to work in the future, the court said that standing by itself is not good enough in this case. And so the plaintiff really did not win on either ground, and they are, I believe the Troop court presented them as separate reasons. Also in Troop, there was absolutely no evidence by the plaintiffs that she was not intending to return back to work at some time in the future, which is almost the same case that we have here.
Well, it seems that back here that you really did expect her to return, and she just didn't.
Which would add some credibility to that. That's true. She
well,
did
I'm
not
just kind of, I know you can frame this in fear and all sorts of other things, but just looking at it from the what actually happened, it seems that ARC wanted to hire her, and I guess almost expected to. And then for whatever reason, either she didn't call back or they didn't try hard enough to get a hold of her or something, she never came back. Glad you heard from her.
That's my understanding of that. That summarizes this case as I understand it. If there are no further questions, we've covered all of my points. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Kelly?
ARC wanted to hire Selena Venturelli, but only if she wasn't pregnant, and that's the problem. This is not a case about a reasonable exercise of business judgment, because ARC never asked Selena Venturelli, if we hire you today, what day will you come back to work? There's no evidence at all that ARC cared how long her maternity leave was going to be if they hired her. I think using the analysis that we've heard from ARC, ARC could tell any female employee as soon as they get pregnant, even though ARC has a maternity leave policy, we're going to fire you because you got pregnant and we're not sure if you're going to come back to work after your pregnancy ends. You can't allow an employer to make those kinds of decisions based on stereotypes about what pregnant women are likely to do, as opposed to gathering the information that they need in order to make a business judgment about whether a leave of absence will be disruptive to the business. And there was no suggestion in the record here that ART ever asked those questions or undertook that analysis. Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.